Hello and welcome to Web3 Delight podcast. My name is Teša Tešanović and I will be your host today. Web3 is not about technology. This is a social movement towards transparency, consensus, inclusiveness, ownership and openness. To that end, we'll explore different elements of Web3 with our guests and learn from their journeys. As an expert for decentralized governments, you have worked a lot on similar on projects that are developing those issues. How does the decentralized government relate to the problems that we currently have in the NFT markets?
Well, the biggest problem we're experiencing in crypto right now is crime. And NFTs have just made that even worse than ever before. There are many ways to get scammed in crypto, as probably most of you know, but again, with NFTs, the degrees of ways you can get in crime or scammed have just increased. So I've built the only blockchain in the world it's Ethereum based, but has decentralized governance. Basically, what this allows us to do is if someone has an NFT or any crypto asset stolen, first of all, they get a notification on their email that something has happened. So they know something has happened. And then through decentralized governance, we can do a vote to freeze the attacker's address. And then you can do another vote to drain the attacker's address and return it back to the user. This is pretty advanced technology that no one else has built. But I firmly think this is the direction that things are going to go in the future, because the crypto space is growing very fast. The NFT space is growing extremely fast. And there's going to be a lot of new users who would be vulnerable. And this is a way that you disable the criminals. And when you disable the criminals, you find that you have less people who try to commit crime, because their likelihood of success is far less. And that's exactly what we've done. This is not like an idea. This is something we've had in practice for several years. And it works extremely well at solving the matter of crime, of blockchain crime.
Thing that you mentioned is one of the fundamental problems with the blockchain technology, the irreversibility of the transactions, the fact that you cannot undo anything that has been done.
Yeah, that's a great point. And this is actually a great point you bring up. You see, the word decentralization, what does decentralization mean? See, decentralization means a network that's virtually impossible to take down. In other words, if you have a blockchain that has five nodes, it's pretty easy to take down. You go to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 nodes and you can basically take down the network. So you need to have a network that is decentralized, that has hundreds or thousands of nodes. But decentralization does not mean having a lack of governance or lack of leadership. In fact, these will be necessary components of blockchains in the future. This is a bit of a futuristic idea. You know, I've been in crypto for 10 years. I was, in Ethereum when Ethereum was being born, and there were other versions that, were trying to compete for the same thing. But, smart contracts were a huge upgrade for crypto. That's what Ethereum brought, smart contracts. The next big level is governance. And even Vlad, who's one of the co-founders of Ethereum, has been saying the same thing. Governance is the main thing missing from Ethereum. So it's the next level.
So what is the basics of the decentralized governments? How do you reverse these transactions?
Yeah, great question. So the key thing is we are not rolling back the blockchain. It is not a KYC blockchain. It's nothing like that. And this is a really cool conversation, because a lot of people haven't even mentally explored this too much. But basically what it is imagine using Ethereum. It's very similar to Ethereum. But again, if a crime occurs, you set up an email alert. So you get an email. If someone breaks in your wallet at 2 a.m. on a Friday night, you check your phone on Saturday and you see something moved, or all your money moved without you doing it. That's a way you know something happened. And again, it's built into our protocol. It's basically a voting system that's built into the protocol, that the community can come together. And if 10% of the community comes together and says, hey, that's a bad actor, that's a scammer, it can freeze the address at the protocol level. At that point, that address can no longer interact. It cannot do anything. It cannot send any assets anywhere. It cannot send any money anywhere. And then you can do another vote on the network. And if this is a draining vote, and if this hits a 10% vote quorum, so if 10% of the network votes for it and more people say yes than no, then an address can be drained, meaning the funds from that address can be pulled into a recovery address, and then we can send it back to the victim. This is pretty advanced technology. Again, I'm the only one I know in this space who's built it, but it's again, very, very helpful, and it works. It's that's the thing too. It's been tested for years. We've solved hundreds of crimes. What we do when we freeze an address is we have our investigative team. We have some people who do investigations for FBI and Interpol. They investigate to see what really happened. So to expand on it a little more, when we start a vote, any address can be temporarily frozen for 14 days if there's just more yes votes than no votes. So in other words, it's pretty easy to temporarily freeze an address, but that can only be for 14 days. But that's enough time for us to figure out what's going on. And then if there actually is a crime, then we can get the 10% vote to permanently freeze the address. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. But how do you prevent the misuse of the network? For example, if someone falsely has accused someone of stealing his funds.
Yeah, we have had some incidents over the years of people falsely accusing, or sometimes it's the criminal who acts like they're the victim. And that's why we do investigations to figure out what actually happened. It's not so different than a normal police investigation to figure out what happened. And we can come to a determination of what took place. And ultimately, what this technology will lead to, not everything will always be black and white. So ultimately, this course of direction leads to courts for disputes and stuff like that. But to not get too far off subject, again, the vast majority of what we're seeing today is people just really outright, they just try to reach into someone's wallet and steal their stuff. You know, that's, and we see this problem all the time today, you know, on Ethereum, on any other blockchain, you know, just outright theft. And this solves that problem.
One of the big problems nowadays is also the theft of the NFTs. How do we prevent that?
Yeah, it's same technology. But with NFTs, there are so many more ways to get scammed. There's a lot of social engineering attacks or tricks. There's a lot of tricks. They try to trick you that they're your friend, or I'm giving you a free NFT. I click on this button, and you click on the button, and it wasn't the free NFT. It just drained your wallet. So lots of things like that. So the same technology also applies. So I've not only built a blockchain that does this, but our team has been actually building an NFT marketplace. We've been building it for the past 18 months. We will thus have the only NFT marketplace that has this sort of security to protect users. And there's actually another major component here that, you know, users have been getting scammed for a long time. But what I never saw before until 6 months ago was businesses getting scammed. So what's going on today is the big NFT marketplaces, OpenSea and Blur, those are the two biggest ones, they are not paying royalties out to projects. And the essence, you have to understand NFTs. You see, NFTs have a huge innovation. They have changed the game of crypto. Why? What do NFTs bring? The big thing they bring are royalties. Royalties are 5%, 7%, 10%. Every time an NFT is bought or sold, the creator gets a percentage of that. This is game changing. Let me tell you why. You have Bored Ape Yacht Club. They went from being worth nothing to $4 billion in 11 months. How did they become worth $4 billion? It's because of royalties. When you have $100 million of royalty revenue and you put a 40 times multiplier on that, it's $4 billion. So royalties are the game-changing aspect of NFTs. So what's going on today is OpenSea and Blur have stopped paying royalties. Why did they stop paying royalties? Well, because they wanted to compete against each other. See, all these marketplaces want to compete. They want to give the lowest fees. But in order to do that, not only did they reduce their fees, they stopped paying royalties. But in other words, they're basically stealing money from the projects by not paying them. So once again, I've seen users be scammed. I never have seen businesses being scammed like is the case today. So what my technology does is, again, not only protect users, but in our NFT marketplace, we also will protect all the creators, all the projects. Royalties are enforced. If any marketplace tries to not pay royalties, they will be blocked. And that's basically, yeah, that's how it works.
But OpenSea has left the space open for some kind of on-chain royalties that wouldn't be on the website.
Yeah, there's some EIPs out there that are trying to propose on-chain royalties. The main issue with on-chain royalties that I see is it's hard to determine when an NFT is being traded or when it's being moved. So for example, if you have an NFT in a wallet and you want to move it to another wallet, it can be difficult to determine, is that a trade happening or is that you actually moving it? If you charge a royalty every time you move an NFT, that can be a bad user experience. Because let's say you want to move it from one wallet to another. You don't want to sell it. You just want to move it. People don't want to pay a royalty for that. And on the other hand, if you don't enforce that, then there's a high likelihood that people will find their way around it. That's exactly what happened, by the way, with Blur. You see, OpenSea actually created an operator filter that was supposed to stop Blur from not charging royalties. It's called an operator filter. It blocked Blur from not charging royalties. What Blur did is they used OpenSea's own contract, the Seaport contract, and almost like a virus pretends like it's a healthy part of a cell. That's what Blur did. And they basically backdoored into OpenSea and then are able to get in without charging fees. So basically what I'm telling you is the crypto space has so much of this sort of crime that the actual solution that's needed is a comprehensive form of decentralized governance like what we've created.
But you mentioned that there is some kind of a bureau of investigations. Who is controlling the bureau? How was the bureau founded?
Yeah, it's called the Energy Bureau of Investigations. Like you said, it's part of our organization, you know. And we do the investigations, and the purpose here is to really to stop crime. I want to be clear here: we're not interfering with, you know, 99, you know, plus percent of affairs. It's if there's a crime that's reported, there needs to be that. If you take a big step back from all this. The big pick, like, let me give you an example. I brought my friend, she's an artist. I brought her into NFTs and, you know, she's been doing well. She's been growing and people actually sent her some free NFTs and it's great. And then someone was sending her what she thought was a free NFT and she clicked okay on the MetaMask. And next thing you know, her wallet is drained. Like basically all her stuff is stolen. Like, this is not the future of crypto. The future of crypto is not you bring your friend, your family, and they have to be scammed, you know, and lose all their stuff and worry about all the sorts of scams. And there's so many people who'll be joining crypto. The future of crypto is where you can have a reasonable expectation of a safe experience. You know, I think about this stuff a lot. You really, if you think of the end game of crypto, what does crypto look like at the very end? It's competition for governance. Which blockchain is governing well? Right now, we're the main ones in the race, but at whatever point in the future, it won't be the case. And you can have a choice. If you like how one blockchain governs, you'd be on that one. If you don't like how one governs, you go on another one. And you can always have the choice of being on a blockchain with no governance. That's what we have right now. Ethereum, Bitcoin, there's no governance. So if you lose your stuff, it's gone. And that's the status quo. And I mean, I've been victim to scams. I had $1 million stolen from me in 2017. And the Ether Delta hack, it was not a fault of mine. The website was hijacked. There was no way to know it was hijacked. So they got access to my account. They stole my stuff. I work with Secret Service. I got the guys in prison. I never got my money back. I mean, this is not the future of crypto. The future, like, you want to have these banks moving billions of dollars, you know, big money. They cannot worry about it moving on a, like, even USDC. USDC has governance. But if a hacker steals $50 billion of USDC and immediately turns it into Ethereum, nothing, nobody can do about it. That's a major problem. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, those things about the governments are very interesting. So there will be some kind of a DAO that would vote on the violations of these things.
Exactly.
That's a very inventive solution for a problem that hasn't been solved yet in the blockchain ecosystem.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we have the solution. It's we built it in stealth. We didn't make a lot of noise and we're building it and we tested it, made sure it works. But at this point, yeah, this technology has matured in you know, a releasable stage, and it's working very well. So yeah, I'm proud of it.
Yeah, that's a thing that definitely should be considered. The incidents that happened last year with the demise of the FTX have shown the dangers of keeping your funds in the centralized exchange. Can the development of some kind of a protocols like this help us with the problem of the trust towards a centralized exchange? Maybe we can solve some of those issues on a protocol level.
Yeah, actually, like, for example, if FTX had some assets here, first of all, we would have on our blockchain, we'd have the ability to seize those assets. The biggest problem with FTX is they on their books, you know, they had they said they had a bunch of money, and but in reality they were spending it. So this is the difficulty of the blockchain is basically you had a centralized exchange that was hiding the fact that it did not have the money. So it's a bit of an issue of them hiding their stuff, which is a problem, and actually one of the reasons why I think this sort of stuff should be transparent. I used to be really big into privacy, and I'm in general in life I am big in privacy, but I mean in blockchain. But there does need to be some transparency, especially with big organizations. Yeah, and that's why, to be honest with you, that's why I like DeFi, because DeFi is provable transparency. You can see the money behind, an asset or a loan or collateral. It's all on the blockchain. It has to be there. So you can't do what FTX did and, you know, obfuscate it and hide it and whatnot.